Hello, everybody, and welcome to the greatest fantasy football show in the entire world, the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast, Tuesdays with Emery, the czar of the fantasy playbook. Well, you're really the czar of the playbook, but we've kind of co-opted you into the fantasy playbook. Emery Hunt, what's up, man?
What's going on, Nando, man? As always, a pleasure to join you here on this fine audio podcast that we have here at The Athletic.
By the way, if you like what you hear, Emery, also one of our writers, if you're listening and you're not a subscriber yet, we're running a 40% off special for listeners to this podcast. So, or I guess listeners of this podcast, our friends and family. TheAthletic.com/fantasyfootballpod. You don't need to punch in a code or anything. Just go to that page and you get 40% off. It's all set up for you. So there you have it. Emery, weird, right? Like, it's basically the second week of August. There aren't any preseason games. There's not a lot of, I mean, I think Hard Knocks starts tonight. That's basically going to be the only video we have for football. Right.
Yeah, it's funny because I just found out Hard Knocks starts tonight. I want to say, what, 30 minutes ago? Really? I had forgot.
Right, nice. Really?
Because, you know, normally I'm usually at training camp, at Giants camp, just, you know, with all the video and practices and stuff like that. I'm usually like four shades darker by now, but, you know, I kind of.
You're hanging out by the pool instead?
Never that. You know, I'm always hanging out at somebody's football practice, but. You know, because the schedule has been blown up, every day is the same day as Groundhog's Day since March.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we can enjoy Hard Knocks tonight. Maybe talk about it next week.
There you go.
I really don't know what to expect. I mean, like, I really, so people have been saying, and like a few people have said this to me, like it just doesn't feel like, I don't have that like fantasy buzz yet. I don't have that drive. And I'm thinking like, you know, probably because there's nothing on TV, you're not seeing any highlights, but maybe once Hard Knocks starts and you actually see like, football players hitting each other and the grunts and the coaches kind of yelling, maybe that'll light the fire under the pilot light under some people, so to speak.
And I long for the days where we got the, you know, the Hard Knocks like the Ravens or the Chiefs early on when Herm Edwards was the coach. But I feel like now it's legitimate, you know, state run TV where they're going to show exactly what the coaches want to show and the players going to say exactly what the players our coach to say, so we won't really get anything, just like a hour long commercial.
But it's
for
something.
The NFL.
Is it something? It's something.
It is something. Because you know right. I was about to say Vine videos. You know, we're getting tweet clips from the teams themselves, which is better than anything. And then you know, some teams don't have video. Some teams just use still shots, which is listen. I find it funny that NFL teams swear that football is this top secret thing. Like, imagine being this, you know, worried about somebody seeing your stuff to go out there and just run inside zone all day. Like, I just don't get it.
Yeah. But hey, maybe the intrigue is what makes it so mystifying and popular.
Yeah, we did find out about Jared Goff a couple of years ago that about his intellect. But
we mentioned that last week a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, next week, I'd say a 50-50 chance Jordan Rodrigue joins us. So stay tuned for that. She's our Rams beat writer. Talk a little Rams with Emery. That'll be fun. In the original rundown, when she might have joined us today, I just had a line that was just like, let the two of them talk. Because I've seen it. There's a video. You two are good together.
I like how you was going to take the easy way out and just like, okay, cool. We got a guest. I do no work today, so let those two guys talk.
There were two. There was a one, and then there was a two, but it's like, do you want the same boring answer? Like, hey, what do you think this year about the backfield? Hey, how about those wide receivers? What's it going to be like? So I figured, like, just let you two kind of take it where it goes, and I'll guide it, you know, a little bit.
Now, but you're right, though. It does get monotonous, though. It does get monotonous. You know, everyone... I like when people ask you, hey, what you think about this? Well, I think X, Y, Z and A, B, C and 1, 2, 3. And then you give them all that information. Yeah, but see, this is how I see it. Like,
this is Emery's awakening to fantasy Twitter. It's worse than baseball, man. Be lucky you're not the czar of the, there's no baseball equivalent of the playbook.
I guess the diamond?
Yeah, the czar of the diamond.
I am enjoying watching my Marlins play, though. You know, granted, we on a two-game losing streak to the Mets, but hey, you know what? This may be the year. You notice every time we make the playoffs, and I say we because I'm a diehard Marlins fan.
How'd that happen?
Because in New Orleans, we didn't have a baseball team growing up.
Oh, you have the Zephyrs?
We had the Zephyrs came after the Marlins started in 92.
All right.
And so when we got the Zephyrs, that was pretty cool. We had a minor league team. So I grew up watching a lot of Marlins games and a lot of Miami Heat games. I'm a Heat and Marlins fan, basketball and baseball.
Wow. Marlins.
So every time we make the playoffs, we win the World Series.
So hopefully you're one of the 16 teams that makes the playoffs this year.
Exactly. You
get a good chance. let's talk about today's show. We've gone too far into baseball.
Too far.
So we're going to talk a little Mecole Hardman, just because I'm genuinely personally curious about him. And Emery Hunt, not favorite, Jordan Howard. But I just want to get a little bit of how he wanted. Like, what can we expect from him in Miami as opposed to Jordan Howard in situation X or situation Y, which he was in the last couple of years? Going to dig a little deeper into Miami. And this is all, by the way, we might just do this entire show on Mecole Hardman. That's how it goes sometimes. But just in case, I got a question from the mailbag, actually, about the 2021 rookie class. A little more Dolphin stuff, Nyheim Hines, and then some New Orleans locker room stuff, which I have at number 7, but I might bump up a little bit because I feel like you might have some good stuff to say on this. But I want to start with Mecole Hardman because, and this is me. You know, I guess it's August. We still have a month until the season starts and a few weeks until draft season's over. But I kind of had dismissed Mecole Hardman as kind of like a burner who's going to catch, you know, a long pass on 3 targets, maybe get a long touchdown. And then, like, we had a question in the mailbag about him. And, I'm like, you know what, let me just, so I can sound smart, pull up some stats. And the more I looked at his stats, especially last year, Tyreek Hill, his rookie year, and I guess that's an apt comparison because they're both speedy guys on Kansas City. Tyreek Hill, his first year, was, I think, almost the same amount of yards that Mecole Hardman had. 6 touchdowns, just like Mecole Hardman had, receiving at least. But Mecole Hardman did it on, I think, half the targets, or maybe half the receptions. And meanwhile, we've seen Tyreek Hill kind of grow into this. I mean, last year he had 19 targets in a game. So he's no longer that speed threat, just that dude who's going to burn. Like, he's that guy who has become, or maybe he always was, a well-rounded football player and is now in the role that can kind of show that he's a well-rounded wide receiver. So Mecole Hardman, the more I dig, man, I'm starting to like him more and more and more as maybe taking a step this next year. The problem is, you know, Sammy Watkins is still there. Travis Kelce's going to catch a bunch of passes. They throw to the backfield. So I guess, Emery, grade my work and fact check me here, and let's get into Mecole Hardman a little bit.
Well, you're right in your assessment, and that's what kind of gives you cause for pause because of all those other options. Had it not been for, let's say, at least Sammy Watkins, you can say, okay, he's going to make a significant jump this year. But we saw how valuable Watkins was in the playoffs, and, you know, when you factor in Hill and Kelce and Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Mecole Hardman, I think, is going to be essentially what we saw last year. He's just going to be that guy that's going to have to maximize his opportunities. I mean, he averaged, what, 20 yards a catch? He was very Flipper Anderson-like within this offense last year. So I can foresee him being that again. Because when you have that deep speed that both he and Hill have, they're going to be primed to go deep down the field a lot. So it's not that he's necessarily just a deep threat. He's just a guy that can get deep, and he's in a great offense to do that. And it's just, it's a great thing in reality because you have so many weapons, but in fantasy, you kind of have to treat him like his stats suggest. You can't treat him as a wide receiver 1 or wide receiver 2. You really have to treat him as a flex guy.
Yeah. Well, you know what? So I was watching his video, and you were actually in the back of my mind as I'm watching it because, you think of Hardman as like a speedy guy who's just going to burn the top off the defense and catch a long pass. But I was watching his the top 10 plays that the Chiefs put out last year, and a lot of them were him going out 15 yards, catching, and then just zooming off. Like, it's not like a dude you just run as fast as you can, I'll throw it to you and you can catch it. There are a couple of those. But, you know, he had a 60-yard, I think he had 6 40-plus yard plays, touchdown plays last year. And some of them, I'd say half of them were him, 15 yards out, catching the ball, making a move, and just outrunning everybody. You know, like, even taking it kind of diagonal on the field to outrun everybody that way instead of going straight up the hash marks. I thought that was pretty impressive. I guess watching a little more of his video, those touchdowns made me like him a little more.
Yeah, people tend to think of deep threat as, okay, it's always going to be deep. But, you know, I've always said speed doesn't necessarily make you a deep threat. It's your ability to track and catch the football that makes you a deep threat, and you don't have to have, you know, blazing speed to be that. But for him, within his offense, because how they spread the field and because of how Mahomes does a great job of breaking contain and extending the play and finding guys open, and a guy like Miko Hardman can do a great job of, you know, breaking off his route and creating space. Now, once he catches the football, it turns into a punt return or a kick return for him, and he's just, you know, running to open grass. And when you're faster than a lot of people on the field, you're going to get from point A to point B pretty quickly.
You know, I like how you used to say, well, I think you say it all the time, but I think it was in a column last year, how, you know, like these, the guys, and we talked about this last week, the guys in the punt return and kick return teams, because this happened. So again, I was researching again and I hit on Chase Edmonds, and someone had asked, like, is it going to be Chase Edmonds? He's going to be just like a handcuff to Kenyon Drake, or is he going to be like a legit player into, you know, his own kind of guy? And I was researching him at the end of last year, and I'm like, I know he was hurt, but he was off the injury report in December. And then the last couple things I read, it was just Chase Edmonds was working on special teams. And again, man, it made me think, like, that's like, if you're good on special teams, you can show you can make plays, you're going to get in the real game. Was it different for Edmonds? I mean, like, is this something where we're looking at this year where Kenyon Drake, and I know Chase Edmonds is an Emory guy, and he's actually a Nando guy too because he's a Fordham guy. But is he kind of relegated to this background now because maybe Kenyon Drake is a Cliff Kingsbury guy and and Edmonds wasn't, like, he was there before Kingsbury showed up? Or is this something where, like, maybe they were just rolling and maybe Edmonds is a better fit? Because if you look at Drake's numbers, he only really had, like, I think three awesome games where he broke out for a ton of yards, and there were four that were just kind of like 3-point whatever, 2-point whatever yards per carry and not a lot of receiving yards. How would you sort that out?
Yeah, I think when you look at the offense, it's you know, it's going to be, there's never going to be a true bell cow. Because if you go back to, you know, Kingsbury at Texas Tech, it was always a committee. And so both guys are going to have their chances. I'm glad Edmonds got the chance when Drake was hurt to be the starter against the Giants, and he ran for over 100 yards and scored, what, three or four touchdowns? So he proved it then. Then he got hurt. And then, in the subsequent game, I believe, and then that's when we didn't see him play a lot down the stretch. But I do think both guys have that ability to thrive in this offense, which is why they felt comfortable. Granted, you're getting a huge haul for the guy they let go, but I felt as though, because of what they had on the roster, they felt easier in letting go David Johnson. And yes, you get DeAndre Hopkins in, but you know, if you felt as though Johnson was going to be a key cog to this offense, a tailor-made fit, it probably wouldn't have been beneficial to let him go. But because they have Edmonds and because they have Drake and they drafted Eno Benjamin, I felt as though, hey, they looked at it as like, yeah, we got enough here in the backfield to be successful. It won't be a bell cow, but it'll be a situation where you're going to have a guy. Both guys, I think, could finish with 500 yards rushing, over 500 yards. Now, who has the most? All depends on who gets the lead out the gate.
Right. Was last year's the way that Edmonds ended last year? That wasn't an indication of how they're going to use him this year, right? Like, he barely played at the end of last year.
Yeah, he barely played, but I don't know how much of that was due to health or, you know, coaches just getting it, you know, stuck into a routine and playing, you know, the guy that they brought in, or just because they were trying to, you know, they didn't want to lose him or what have you, but they barely played him. So maybe he just wasn't 100% down the stretch.
Are we Kyler Murray guys here? Are we a big breakout Kyler Murray?
Yeah, I think so. I think when you watch how they play, it's straight point and shoot. You know, it's like catch, throw, catch, throw, catch, throw. It's a lot of reps. It's a lot of plays. And when you factor in his ability to you know, create, be mobile, scramble, extend, along with the weapons that they have on the perimeter and the way he helps out the run game because of his own mobility and the improvements along the offensive line. Yeah, we're big Kyler Murray fans here because of what the potential could be for this season. I think he's primed for one of those ridiculous numbers type seasons as he becomes more acclimated to the NFL game.
Is he the Emory surprise fantasy draft guy? Like, when you get that quarterback in like the third or fourth round, is that Is that this year's Mahomes or Lamar Jackson? Like, you do have a streak that you need to keep up.
Right, and I feel as though I've gone all in on Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah.
You know, and so Haskins can be that guy. But I think Haskins is going to be more along the lines of having that golf breakout year where he threw like 30-something touchdowns, so on like 10 interceptions, something like that. But Murray is going to tack on the 500 or so rushing yards too, you know, which pushes him up. So I say both guys would be guys that you can feel comfortable with. I do like Haskins in this role this year with Washington, but I also like...
Oh, yeah? You've been very shy about talking about that.
Yeah, you know, because I'm sick of people trying to... You see what's happening nowadays. People are trying to make this Alex Smith a thing, you know?
Yeah.
What's funny quickly about Alex Smith is, like, the reason why he got shipped out of San Francisco was because he was too conservative and he felt like the offense was stagnated. So they brought in someone more dynamic, Colin Kaepernick. He goes to Kansas City. They have success, but they feel like the offense is stagnated. It's too conservative. He doesn't really push the ball vertically down the field. In comes Patrick Mahomes. And now you go to Washington where you bring in a guy that can push the ball vertically down the field, has the accuracy that you want, and you're going to talk about Alex Smith, who has already been tagged conservative, too conservative, and now coming off a leg injury where he's going to lose the one attribute he had, which was his mobility. And now he's going to be older, less mobile, still conservative, and now prone to take sacks as opposed to get out the way. Why are people consistently, purposely stupid? Like, this is all the evidence that's telling you Alex Smith, this is a non-factor on his damn football team.
I mean, it's like a Hallmark movie, though. I think people just want the story. I don't know if they actually want Alex Smith, the quarterback. I think if you're watching TV and you see Alex Smith come trotting onto the field, you're like, oh my God, just please don't hit his leg. Please don't hit his leg. You know, I've seen the pictures. I think people just want the story, you know?
Yeah, I learned early in my life when I was, I want to say, in elementary. Once I found out that Greek mythology was just made up stories, so like, yo, this is, people believed it. People love this. This is dumb. This is not, I thought this was history. This is just fake. Oh, so.
Well, maybe it's not made up.
Yeah, it's made up.
All right.
So there's a god of water out there, like a Poseidon, like a big, you know, 6'5", 265 pound sea god out there, like with muscles and, you know, crown and human features. But
is that the one that bothers you? Poseidon's the one that bothers you? Not all of them? I think you're underrating him at 6'5", too. I think you've had 65.
Oh, man.
Oh, by the way, Emery Hunt on the Liz Loza Yahoo show this week.
Hey, man, I'm doing catch big things, man. They catch me everywhere, man. Like, follow, you know, F-ball game plan, you know. I don't know where I might be tomorrow.
Liz Loza is one of the best. I like her.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
She was awesome.
Yeah, she's a big Chicago Bears fan.
I could see her being a Bears fan.
Yeah, I think she's Chicago native, I believe.
Yeah, I could see her being from Chicago.
She, I remember we had her on the Sirius show back in the day, you know, like 2014. And she just had like, there was this moment where she was talking about something that she read that was like super deep about, I can't remember who the quarterback was at the time or who he was thrown to, but lo and behold, like 3 weeks later, those two blew up. So good time talking with Liz Loza.
Yeah, she was awesome. It was fun talking to her. We were talking Rams.
Oh, there you go. Everyone wants to talk the Rams.
Yeah, kind of Hard Knocks. You know that?
Yeah, the Rams and the Chargers.
Chargers still in the league?
Yeah. Still call them San Diego.
Yeah, I think so. Things won't go great for the Chargers until they move back to San Diego and start wearing those Junior Seau uniforms again. When they wore those, I thought they were like at their best.
Well, they were, right? I mean, that was like the golden years of the San Diego Chargers. LaDainian Tomlinson days.
No night games. Every game was at you know, felt like it was at noon Pacific time. Bright sun. Infield still in the, you know, Padres still playing.
Yeah. You could feel the sea breeze kind of just rolling over.
Exactly. And for some reason, Junior Seau was always allowed to line up offside, and nobody called it. So, love those Chargers.
Used to be running back? Sounded bitter. Yeah, it's a little bit. Hey, we can talk the Chargers. Hey, look, I know we have a rundown, but if you want to go to Tyrod Taylor and the Chargers and what's Austin Eckler going to do, we can, or we can go to Jordan Howard, who I know you don't really like.
Well, it's not that I don't really like Jordan Howard. It's just that, you know, here's the thing. When you have the analysis side of things and the fanalist side of things, it gets frustrating when you're providing the analysis, yet you keep getting bombarded by the fanalist that tells you that this guy is the next coming of Walter Payton. Well, and you as an analyst, you know, it's like, okay, if he's the next coming of Walter Payton, then why would he have ever been let out of Chicago? And now he has been let out of two places, Chicago and now Philadelphia, because of the same reasons. He's a good back, but I think because he doesn't bring anything from a dynamic standpoint as far as explosive runs or, you know, catching the ball out of the backfield or being a downfield threat in the passing game, it makes him one dimensional. So he's more of a complimentary back. So that's all I was trying to tell people back then. But, you know, when people get emotional and let the fanalism start to come out, and so that blocks any logic coming in. So now they're starting to see, you know, two teams removed, and now he's on his third. He's going to another situation where I think he's going to be paired in a tandem with Matt Breida, who has the explosiveness and can catch the ball in the backfield. And you're going to see more of Howard being like the four-minute offense back and a closer, short yardage goal line. So he's going to have a role. And this situation, I think, will look a lot like what we saw in Arizona with both Edmonds and Drake. I think both guys are going to have their ability to carry the football and have some stats, so to speak, to use a fantasy term. But I just don't see anyone being, you know, okay, we got to take this guy because they're going to produce a projected X, Y, and Z amount of yards. Because I think what Miami's going to do, if now, from all intents and purposes, if Tua's out there, they're going to try to, you know, prove that Tua is the franchise guy. They're going to try to run that offense through him, which probably leans more toward Breida than it does Howard. So I think the run game will be used to keep the passing game on schedule. And, you know, they're going to just use that as a play setter as opposed to trying to really develop and establish a run. I think they're really going to try to air it out.
Well, so this is where actually this is perfect that you're doing the show here, because I have questions. So Jordan Howard, I would think of him as like the traditional, like kind of like table setting running back who would be like the complement or the, you know, the other swing of the pendulum to someone like Tua. But are you saying like Matt Breida works better with Tua because he can kind of run around and get open and be a little, like, I guess, wily. Whereas Jordan Howard just, you know, run forward. Is that what you mean? Like the dynamism is kind of complemented better by Breida than it is Howard, which I guess could also be a compliment just on the other kind of side of things. Like he's the traditional guy, Tua is the wild card, and then you kind of have people maybe guessing. Or is it like you need two kind of wild cards in there for it to really click at its highest level? Does that make sense? Did I get too weird? Was that too weird?
You got kind of weird, but I'm going to try to rein you in a little bit. I think what happens, because one thing about Tua, people think Tua as this Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, or Lamar Jackson type guy where they're counting on him being a factor in a run game, when that's really not Tua's game. You know, Tua is more, you know, scramble as opposed to, you know, run or take off and run. And I think that's why I compare Tua's game to Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, he's athletic. He's more of a pocket mover and a scrambler than a guy that you can really count as a plus one in a run game. So he really won't help, you know, aid the run game like Kyler Murray, Lamar Jackson, or Russell Wilson would. So he's going to do a good job of getting the ball out of his hands quickly, buying some time. He's deadly accurate. So if you want someone that's going to help the run game out, it will have to be Breida, because Breida is the more explosive. And like you mentioned, Howard is the pace setter. Howard is going to, you know, average 4.2 yards a carry. That's going to be Howard's thing. But Breida is going to give you that element of the explosive play, whether that's as a receiver on the screen or in the run game where he has a lane, he can, you know, run past a lot of people. So I think that's why you're going to see both used in tandem as opposed to one guy being the guy.
You know, I got another question. You talk about Jordan Howard not being a good pass catcher, and you were running back. Like we saw Aaron Jones before last year, he actually went back to his hometown, and I believe he worked out with a bunch of like high school quarterbacks, who like would just sit there and just throw him pass after pass after pass after pass after pass. And there was like a cute little twist where he paid them in milkshakes or something like that. I got to read the story again. I might be paraphrasing. There might be something I'm missing there, but the point is, that's a skill you can learn, right? Like, doesn't Jordan Howard say, like, I'm not a good pass catcher. Let me learn. Let me go use the next 4 months this offseason. And maybe this offseason is a bad example, but any offseason, he's been in the league for 4 years, this is his fifth now. Couldn't he say, like, let me go learn how to do this? Let me go to the best pass back catching coach in the land and have him teach me? Or is that a skill you can learn? Or is it something like that, if he's not learning it, you could tell a lot about that player? How about that?
It's a skill that you can learn, but it's also something that tends to come naturally to people. Think about it, man. The first thing you learn how to do as a kid is throw and catch, right?
Yeah.
So, and you can tell who can catch by how they, you know, attack the ball or what have you. And I think, you know, when we say Jordan Howard is not a good receiver, we're not talking about him just catching your standard meets expectations passes like your screens, flares, flats, and flare routes. He can catch those, you know, but that's part of the job. What makes him not like Aaron Jones is that you can see Aaron Jones had that natural ability to catch the ball over his shoulders, away from his body, you know, extending out for a pass, and he looks comfortable catching the football. So you can trust him going downfield. Howard isn't that type of pass catcher. And you can work on catching the football just like you can work on your pocket mobility, and you know, you can work on your route running and, you know, reading coverage and catching the ball over the middle of the field. But all of that changes when it counts for real and adrenaline kicks in and the pressure of the moment kicks in. Then you're not in that ideal scenario of no one's around, you're catching every ball, you're standing in front of a jugs machine, all of that good stuff. When the balls are coming consistently accurate at you, we know not every quarterback throws like the jugs machine or throws it accurately or consistently in the same spot or with the same velocity every time.
Sure.
So for Howard, it's just, you know, it's just I just don't think he's a natural pass catcher that you can trust downfield. But as far as like the standard stuff that you ask backs to do, yeah, he can do those. And that's why I think he's been utilizing those ways as opposed to trying to be forced to be a back that goes downfield. You can just get your back that can do those things as opposed to trying to force it with Howard.
We got two show notes. Very quickly, our producer, Derek Van Riper, says that A.J. Hawk is Poseidon.
Ah, he looks like Poseidon.
Yeah, I don't know, man. You know, I feel like...
I've never seen Poseidon, but I'm pretty sure he probably was like, you know, judging by how the world tends to draw characters, it would look more like A.J. Hawk. For all we know, Poseidon could be blue, you know?
Well, that's... Hey, you know, you might... All these guys like to come down and be in disguise, you know?
True.
That's what makes him so effective. Come down from Mount Olympus, hang out amongst the people, right?
Yeah, Mount Olympus. I forgot about Mount Olympus.
Really?
Because, again, once I deemed, it's almost like wrestling. Once I deemed it fake, it was like out of sight, out of mind.
You should go back and read it. Dude, I love it. Like, you can make little references all the time. If you like.
Yeah, I still use it as, like, granted, I have, you know, I'm big on leadership books and stuff like that. And I still have a couple of Julius Caesar leadership books. Now, even though he was a real person.
He was actually real.
Exactly. He was a real person. But, you know, you draw from some of the anecdotes from Greek mythology all the time. Like, as much as I'm joking on Greek mythology, it does have a moral purpose to some of the stories. But, you know, the whole Medusa turning you into stone when you look. Like, come on, man. I deal in reality, you know.
That's a metaphor for, you know, don't get involved with a bad woman who's been scorned.
Or she turns you to stone, which will mean she'll kill you.
Figurative, yeah. That's exactly what, you know, maybe not even literally kill you, but, you know.
Well, that's what turn to stone mean, right?
Yeah, but it could also mean quote-unquote turn to stone, you know. Like, you could just become a complacent husband, minivan, that kind of stuff.
Gotcha. Oh, see, I didn't think of that side.
See, you think about it like smart. That. Right? You're no longer moving forward. You're just stone, you know? Anyway, good news. We may have a sponsor possibly for the last time now. Hopefully, Ernest, they're not big Greek mythology believers. Maybe they're Roman. Right. Yeah, maybe they're Roman. Interest rates have hit record lows, which means it's a great time to refinance your student loans and see if you can lower your monthly payment. If you've been making the same monthly payment on your student loans for the last couple of years, odds are you could reduce your payment and save by refinancing with Earnest. Even if you've refinanced before, with today's low-rate environment, most people could save by refinancing again. Checking your new rate is fast and easy to start. Complete a few questions online. It only takes 2 minutes. Then you'll get a personalized rate estimate without affecting your credit score. Want to change your monthly payment, combine many loans into one easy payment, or get a better rate? Earnest makes it easy. Plus, there's no origination fee or any other fees. Plus, the internet loves Earnest customer service. They're rated 9.4 out of 10 on Trustpilot. So, you can get $100 cash bonus when you refinance a student loan with Earnest. Go to earnest.com/throwback. Once again, you get $100 cash bonus when you refinance your student loan at earnest.com/throwback. Not available in all states. Visit earnest.com/throwback for more details. Terms and conditions apply. Nice. Earnest fans of the throwback. We'll make it Emory next time. Maybe we can ask if they can make it slash Emory. That'd be cool.
That would be dope.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
That's one more thing I got to add to my portfolio. I've done a lot of stuff, but I haven't been a promo.
We could probably make you a promo code, actually.
That would be awesome.
Well, it's theathletic.com/fantasyfootballpod is what we have right now. But, I mean, maybe DVR can make it. I could maybe even Slack the guy and be like, can we make it theathletic.com/Emory? You sure you want that kind of pressure?
Yeah, because that way I can go update my LinkedIn and put like, yo, listen, not only have I done this, but I'm also a promo code.
All right. If it means that much to you, let me see what I can do. So we got Miami. We talked Tua. I guess we hit that that Tua Fitzpatrick thing. How many games do you think Tua is going to play versus Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I say 12.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I say 12. I mean, because even though they're not going to be pressed to put Tua in, but it's just going to be evident that, you know, Tua is healthy. You know, he's moving around. He's jogging around. He's making Tua-type throws. It's like, you know what? If he's healthy and we're seeing it in practice, let's just get the ball rolling now, you know, instead of trying to kick the can down the road and play this whole Fitzmagic thing. And, you know, you start out 2-0, and next thing you know, you're 2-6. And like, yeah, you know, if he ain't trying to blame
other people. Yeah.
Did you get that from Greek mythology?
I did.
But yeah, you're right. So I think they just have to, you know, get him rolling right away. As soon as because the whole question was whether or not he was healthy or clear for contact. And obviously we won't see that in preseason. And I have a great article coming out on The Athletic about how you are supposed to scout for preseason. So
it's a good article. I read it.
Yeah. Yes. You know, something we threw out there, you know, just to try to get people a good, some good insight on how to scout this unique time that we're in.
Well, because you know all the players. Like, that's it. Like, you know all the players, and you've literally seen all the players. So, like we don't have a preseason. Like, we watch these games to see what people look like. And I actually like a line you put in there, like, trust your eyes, man. You may know more about football than you even know.
People really don't get enough credit for what they know, man. And, you know, we try to make this thing out to be super complicated and, well, he does this way. You got to look at this like, listen, you could have sat there for one game at Louisville and was like, man, I kind of want this quarterback on my team. They can't really touch him. Like,
is that Bridgewater you're talking about?
Oh, I forgot Bridgewater was great too in college. And people doubted him too. But yeah, now I'm talking about Lamar Jackson.
I know.
Oh, they both went 32. Wow. The league is consistent, aren't they? But now you could watch a game and find the best players. And so even if you're not a trained scout or have a trained eye, you know who's good and who's not, man. Even though we can sound technical and professional of what I look for in a running back, you can see that, you know, running back A and running back B are different, and running back A gives you the best chance to win. So people, if they just watch, they know already, but they get so inundated with so much information that they talk themselves out of it.
Emory, how do you think we're going to – so you talk about seeing Tua in practice. How do you think we're going to actually be able to see any kind of practice this year? Is it going to be like a – because I don't even know if reporters are allowed. You know, a lot of stuff during the in-season, you see reporters on the sideline with the kind of the grainy Twitter video. Emory on the sideline with the HD Twitter video.
Exactly, with Canon, you know, the T2i camera footage.
But how are we going to see it this year? Like, do you think maybe like NFL Network or something will be kind of, someone will have this idea, like, let's show some practices on TV so people can get a little more football? Or how are we going to know?
Well, I think what's going to happen, I do know that NFL Network and ESPN, I think they have the clearance too, like the standard protocol. employees, like the .com sites, you know, the Giants.com, Jets.com, those sites.
Yeah.
I think they have the same type of clearance. But what I also believe will happen is teams have their own in-house productions anyway. They can stream practice via Periscope, Twitter, YouTube. They're already running these shows like Building the Browns or Building the Colts. So I think we'll see practices, streamed, because I think that's the best way to keep people engaged. Because we've seen these Zoom calls and I've been terrible at joining them.
Really?
I know the Giants. Yeah, because Giants have one. And it's like as soon as you're getting ready to join, you see all of the beat writers tweeting out everything that everybody says. Oh, Barkley's working hard this year.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
It's like, yo, you know what? I'm not going on this damn Zoom call. Like, because everything is going to be, working hard, just putting in the work, best shape of my life, just trying to be best. Who wants to sit on a 45-minute Zoom call and hear stuff like that all the time? All day, every day from many different players.
Right, right.
So I know there's one later on today when we're filming this, and it's the coordinator. So I kind of want to get on that one because I have legit questions, but I got to fight my way through so how does Daniel Jones look this year? Is he going to be great? It's going to be,
How are you going to use Saquon Barkley?
Exactly.
Talk about Sterling Shepard.
It's terrible. So,
but it's Jason Garrett.
Shout out to the beat writers, though.
Yeah. Shout out beat writers.
You're getting those tough questions in.
Are you intrigued by Jason Garrett?
I am. I think people sleep on Garrett as a coach. I like him as a coach. And just judging on what he was doing in Dallas with the quarterbacks that he has had, like Tony Romo, mobile guy, Dak Prescott, mobile guy, and what he has potentially in Daniel Jones, a mobile guy with the game breaker at running back. And, I'm envisioning a movement type offense. So a lot of boots, waggles, sprint outs, a lot of mesh concepts to where he's going to, put the ball quickly into those catch and run guys' hands because they don't really have a guy that I know everyone in Giants fan land and, Giants beat writer media is Slayton is the next Jerry Rice. But if, from a unbiased non-big blue set of eyes, Slayton is solid, but let's be realistic. You're not going to game plan for Slayton. So he's a catch and run guy. And in Garrett's offense, they're going to put him in situations where he's going to have those opportunities. That's why I didn't think Shermer was a bad coach. Shermer had plays. He had a really good offensive scheme. They just didn't have, the horses in certain spots, in certain positions throughout the course of a game. And it just ultimately did him in. But it wasn't because of a lack of play calling. They had what they needed on offense to be successful. That's why I like him in Denver.
That's right. He's in Denver.
Yep. That's why I think Denver is going to be one team. That whole AFC West is going to be listen, I'm working on the AFC West now on football game plan YouTube videos and nice. Wrapping up those previews. And it's legitimate hard to pick a first, second, third place, fourth place winner. It's going to be a situation where they're going to have four teams in that division with winning records.
That's a bold call, man.
Yeah.
So is it going to be kind of like mediocrity in a weird way? Like no, it's going to have that 13, but I mean like record wise, like if they're just kind of everyone's gonna have a winning record, that sounds like a lot of like 9-7, 9-7, 10-6, 10-6 kind of thing.
Yeah, think about the NFC West. Rams were 9-7 last year, missed the playoffs. Cardinals were 5-10-1, and you looked at that team like, man, if they were a young team that collapsed late in games, they were maybe four legit plays, not point to plays away from being 9-7 themselves. So that's going to be a very competitive division too.
Wow, West. We like the Raiders. Nice.
You're not going to get a prediction out of me just yet.
I don't want to. Hey, no, of course not. By the way, check Emery's got a show on Game Plus every Thursday at 6:30.
Yeah, Thursday, yeah. 6:30 p.m. Eastern time. Check what your cable provider for channel listings.
Yes. So we're going to get into a few more things. We got some time left. I want to talk Nyheim Hines. I want to, you know what? We're going to get into the New Orleans locker room first. But before that, I just want a quick word from Indochino. They're another supporter of the show. So that, I mean, this is Emery week two. We got two sponsors. So this has to feel good. So quick word from Indochino. We'll be right back. Okay. Here's how I think we should finish off show number two. You're a New Orleans guy, and you're a guy who's played football and been around football, and you just people like you and they talk to you. This Drew Brees thing this year, and I find so, like you say, you know how you just mentioned a minute ago ish about how like we're seeing the same tweets over and over and over again from different beat writers. So in my stream, there are like four people with the same quote because they're all on the same Zoom call and they're all hearing the same answers to the questions. Yesterday, it seemed like an Emmanuel Sanders fest, and everyone was just like, Emmanuel Sanders loves how Drew Brees is, you know, no one works harder than him. But I remember when Brees was making these comments, like his entire team was just crapping all over him. And I kind of remember like seeing a Sanders tweet, and I went back and looked, and he just did an SMH ignorant. Mm-hmm. Michael Thomas had a tweet. Malcolm Jenkins had a video. And now they're trying to play like everything's fine and dandy and sweet. And like, is this locker room going to be okay? Like, are they all healed now, or is this going to be something where there's going to be resentment? Are they going to be able to kind of like leave it in the locker room and be able to play? Like, can you just get like a state of this? Because this, we're like, we got all the numbers in the world, but like the intangibles, like this, like can Drew Brees effectively lead a team, quote unquote, lead a team right now, with this weird off season where just like people are dumping on him and Twitter, and now it seems kind of like these forced nice things they're saying about him.
Yeah, he could lead a team. And it, again, at the end of the day, it's football. Once they get out there, everyone wants to be the best that they can be, and they're going to work together to get a job done. I have seen situations that I'm not going to get into on air where it was far worse than this Drew Brees Saints fiasco that happened at the height of the George Floyd protests and things of that nature. And I've seen a team go on and be successful. I've also seen it at the collegiate level and at the pro level. I'll feel you in off air, but
all right. Can't wait.
This is something that is small potatoes to some legit stuff that has gone on in locker rooms and teams were still able to go out and be successful. So I'm not worried about that.
Just Emmanuel Sanders in general. So forget about the controversy I'm trying to stir up. But Emmanuel Sanders coming into New Orleans doing the Sean Payton system. I read something somewhere where, like, Tom Brady, I don't know if Tom Brady said that, you know, I got to learn a new playbook for the first time in however many years. Is this going to be an easy system for Emmanuel Sanders to pick up? Is he going to be fine, great, awesome, perfect fit? Because, I got a lot of Tre'Quan Smith on my best ball teams, grabbing him late. He's available in, you know, basically any round I want him. Is that going to be a thing where Emmanuel Sanders just kind of becomes the number two immediately, or is there some room for growth for Smith? How's that going to all shake out?
Why would you own so much Tre'Quan Smith shares?
I don't know, because everyone loved him like 2 years ago.
You talking to the wrong people. Like, I would have told you stay away from that. So right. This dude, Emmanuel Sanders, is a legit number two. I mean, if Michael Thomas only runs hitches, then Emmanuel Sanders will only run slants or you know, crossing routes. Why? Because Drew Brees doesn't throw it deep anyway. So yeah, he has a chance to immediately come in here and thrive, and because he's going to be running not that – the Saints' offense isn't that complicated. Brees just does a great job of operating and gets it out of his hands quickly. Then you get a healthy Alvin Kamara back that's going to open things up for those guys. We talked about the tight ends before. That was on the Liz Loza.
Yeah, sorry. You're confused.
Sorry. I'm doing so much right now. Doing so much, you know, juggling stuff.
What's this week? What are you doing this week? TV show, podcast?
TV show, podcast, article I just did.
Videos.
Videos, you know, I might, you know, I go jogging. You know, I do all kind of stuff I'm doing, man. So, you know.
Maybe I'll get a jog in.
Yeah, maybe get a jog in. You know, shoot some hoops, get some jumpers up, you know, get down to that bubble. But, yeah, I think it's easier for Sanders to step into this offense. We saw him do it going from San Francisco to Denver. I'm Denver to San Francisco. He just stepped right in and picked it up. So I, you know, and burned the Saints too. So I see him having a really good season along with Michael Thomas. This is something the Saints sorely needed, man. They needed a 1-2 that they really didn't have for a good stretch, man. It's been all Michael Thomas, and he's going to share a little bit of that pie with Emmanuel Sanders.
All right, I'll get rid
so of get rid of your trick. Yeah, I'm about to say get rid of your trick.
Well, look, he had 5 touchdowns each of the last 2 years.
So that's great. That's fantastic.
All right, sorry. We got a question from Joseph H. It was in a mailbag. But by the way, if you want to send in questions for Emery or me, probably mainly Emery, it's fantasypods@theathletic.com. Fantasypods@theathletic.com. We'll read your question on air. I mean, look, we haven't read any yet, so if you email us, I'll guarantee you get on, as long as DVR reads it. It doesn't go to spam. Don't run anything weird. But Joseph H. in the mailbag. Emery, what's your approach to 2021 rookie draft picks with the ripples from COVID affecting college football?
Wow, talk about the perfect question to tie into the article I wrote.
Yeah, right?
Right? You know, this is great. I think you have to really look at who was drafted, where they were drafted, and where they were going. For instance, if you're talking about Jonathan Taylor, this guy was drafted in the 2nd round, going to Indianapolis, behind that offensive line, similar to what he had at Wisconsin. That's a guy you want to take early, you know? So I think you have to look at rookies like that. It's going to be more along the lines of you got to focus on the 1st, 2nd, maybe even some 3rd-round rookies. Everyone else you got to really kind of stash on the back burner, because it's going to be about getting guys ready to play right now. And you have just to be honest with yourself. You know, it's going to be important for a team to get a 1st-round pick ready to play than a 7th-round pick.
You like Kirk Merritt a little bit, though.
I really do, because he is explosive. He's dynamic. He's a good move piece within the formation. You can put him in the backfield, put him on the slot. He can play on the outside. He can return kicks. And that depth chart got decreased by 2. So it pushes him up 2 spots. Along with his skill set, I think he would have been a draftable player had he been invited to the combine, because he would have ran for low 4.4s. He would have jumped 47 inches on the vertical, literally 47 inches, and would have benched 225, I want to say like 40 times. So he would have caught a lot of eyes because of his workout, and they would have went back to his tape and it's like, man, this dude is just like Deebo Samuel. And, you know, he would have got the post-combine pro day circuit buzz that would have gotten him drafted. But because he missed all that because of COVID-19, it didn't work out for him. He went undrafted, but he landed in a great spot.
How is this, like, can you get into the, by the way, we'll get back to Joe because he asked about the 2021 class, but your answer was so good about the 2020 class that I just let you roll with it.
Oh, I'm sorry, Joe. Joseph
H. Don't worry, we got time. We'll get there, Joe. Joseph H. Oh, no, wait, that's Joseph A. Banks.
I know.
Sorry, as I was saying it, it made me think of the clothing store.
Exactly.
Yeah. Kirk Merritt. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, Kirk Merritt. What's his day-to-day look like right now? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Zoom calls and stuff, but when you're doing the Zoom call, are you sending in tape of you working out and running routes and the coaches critique it? Or how's that working? Like, what is it, like, just logistically looking like right now?
Oh, they're practicing. We're just not seeing it because we're not there.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry. Not now. Like a few, like after he signed and before he reported. The acclimation process. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. It's just like working out. Same thing that he was doing probably when he was on Zoom calls and participating with the playbook and all that stuff like that. But probably a lot of what he did prior to getting drafted. Like a lot of these guys were just posting their workouts on YouTube and sharing them on social media and obviously they were sending them to teams. They were posting their workouts and their combines, their virtual combines on YouTube.
And are the coaches, like, is the wide receiver coach, you know, writing back being like, hey, Kirk, you know, I see, like, at this part in the video, I pause it, like, I'm 136, you need to do this instead of that. Like, try this instead of that. Is that how they're is that how they were coaching in the pre-practice era?
I would think so. Also, with technology nowadays, it's easier for coaches to implement a whole playbook as opposed to doing it like the old school way. Coaches can now speak to a concept, show you examples on a video, and send you that pre-packaged video with their voiceover and have you watch that. And if you have any questions, they could then send a response video showing you how, you know, the response to your potential questions. Like if this guy does this, you do this and this. And so the coaching part has become much more streamlined, I believe, with this pandemic. And that's just on the record. So we don't know what these guys were doing off the record. They could have been beating the whole time.
Right. That's a good point. clandestine meetings.
Right.
So you want to get back to Joseph H. Just really quickly, the 2021 rookie picks. If there, I mean, it looks like very much there's going to be a spring college football season. Maybe that seems to be the way we're kind of careening. How's that going to work? Does that affect statuses or anything like that?
Well, what happens is you have to just kind of, from a scouting standpoint, you're working on, like right now, I already have like 100 quarterbacks graded, 120 something running backs graded. So I'm working my way through positions. This is just seniors and maybe some of the high end guys that I know will probably declare or have already declared. Trevor Lawrence is going to declare, Justin Fields is probably going to declare. And so you grade those guys too. But my approach has always been the same. It's going to be like scout what you can scout and wait for guys to pop up, let's say later on in the process, once we either get a season or don't get a season, guys that throw their names into the mix, then you work on those guys. But right now, I think everyone should have that opportunity to really dive into the senior class. And that's why I spend most of my time on the senior prospects, because that way you get a good knowledge base of guys that are going to actually be in the draft. Right now, I think a lot of draft Twitter and a lot of people that cover the draft are always focused on guys that are not eligible. You know, they're talking about, a true freshman quarterback that blew the competition out of the water. Man, when he gets into the league and he's going to be great, like, all right, cool. But, you know, he's not eligible. Like, focus on the seniors.
They want those tweets. Or they want those retweets, man.
That's all it is.
Chasing hearts. Yeah.
That's all it is. It's all for the likes and retweets. So I've been diving, use my time wisely during the early parts of the pandemic, like in March. It was all about just starting to break down senior prospects. And, you know, just obviously it's taking time away from that because I started doing these NFL previews and doing draft recaps and stuff like that. But early on, it was all about early getting a jump on the film watching, because this draft guy last year, you thought it was 683 prospects that I graded. This year, I'm going to have over 1,000. So it's going to be a great draft guy to pick up this year.
Why is that? What's for the jump? Is the jump because the unknown, or is the jump because you're just Emory and you got to improve every year?
You got to improve every year. And that's just me being me. Plus the unknown, because usually I start my draft process in January. You know, once I'm done with my college football season and the NFL season, I start going to these all-star games. And that's when I start the whole process of, you know, getting a familiar of the prospects that are available, then working the list down to a workable number to where I can get done by mid-February before the combine. But now with the way the schedule was set up, and I have no college games to go to on Saturday, as far as broadcasting is concerned, I have the ability now to get more prospects graded. And so that list is going to be about 1,000 players, or a little bit over 1,000, which is great for the fans, because now with the Rock buying the XFL and that potentially starting up in the spring, maybe not this year, but the following year, you're going to have a whole wealth of prospect scouting reports at your disposal. You know, because, you know, the NFL is constantly going to be transactional as far as players come and go. At least you have an idea of who's on your roster and who's not, and you'll be able to, you know, find out what that guy can do.
It's too bad about the XFL. Emory wrote some great stuff about the XFL.
Everyone, I know, man.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good. Oh, we got to check in on Philip Walker too.
You know what I also hate about draft Twitter, and it ties right into your point about Philip Walker.
Yeah.
You notice how they're always trying to replace certain quarterbacks. Right now, if you check all the mock drafts by all of your insert favorite draft Twitter person, they're always putting quarterbacks to Carolina, as if Carolina didn't double down on a position this offseason by signing franchise quarterback Teddy Bridgewater and signing his backup, former franchise quarterback of the Houston Roughnecks, P.J. Walker. So why are you steadily trying to fit Trey Lance or, you know, Justin Fields or some other quarterback to Carolina when they already are set at the position? Shout out to P.J. Walker.
Shout out to P.J. Walker. Yeah, you're right. You would say like a lot of these people on draft Twitter maybe have a hubris.
Yeah, I would say so. You got to humble yourself. Icarus? Yeah, you fly too close to the sun.
There you
burn
go.
Up.
See? Yeah. Whoa.
I told you. I'll, listen, I stay mid-level, ground level. I'm not getting too close to the sun. That's why I still have my wings.
That's why we got two sponsors in our second show. The Power of Emery Hunt. This is great. I love it. This is everybody's favorite show. Remember that.
It really is.
Next week, I promise we'll get to Nyheim Hines if Emery hasn't blown up and become too big for the show.
But I think we answered it, like, right? We can get one more question. We got enough time. We got 3 minutes. Let's get it in.
Do you really think you could talk Nyheim Hines in 3 minutes?
Yeah. What you want to know?
Everything. Now, you know, well, okay, maybe I'm doing another Traquan Smith here, but I look at what's going on in the Indianapolis backfield, and everyone, oh, Marlon Mack, oh, Jonathan Taylor, they're just going back and forth. They're leaving out Nyheim Hines, and I'm like, this guy, he could be Austin Eckler, maybe, right? Like, I mean, Philip Rivers loves those dump-off guys.
You're right. He is going to be the Austin Eckler of this offense. That's a great comparison. I don't know if I did that in an article or if I did it on the Liz Loza show.
When I was could have been an original thought, man. Come on.
You're right. But he is. But you're right. I think the guy people are not talking about is Hines, because Taylor is going to be the bell cow. Mack is the one that's going to either be the comp guy or on the move. You know.
You mean on the move to another team?
Exactly, because you look at Taylor, what he is projected to be. He can catch, he can run, he's got great vision, he's a good foundation back, he has a breakaway speed. Hines is the receiver type guy that has the explosiveness. He's also valuable on special teams. So you're thinking, man, what value can we get from Marlon Mack? I think he may be the one on the move. So yes, people are not talking enough about Nyheim Hines. I think he's going to be heavily involved in his offense.
We did that in 3 minutes.
There you
go. Right. Yeah. Less than 3 minutes. Take that, DVR. All right. On tomorrow's show, Jake Seeley, Brandon Funston, Fantasy Hall of Famer Brandon Funston, and Michael Beller. We'll be back next week, I assume. We're aiming for 5 sponsors. And then Thursday, I got the show with Moody, and then I have no idea what Friday is, but let's say some combination of like Jake and Beller. So get excited. It's an off day. There's no show on Friday. Sorry, I've just been informed of that. It's the Athletic Fantasy Football Podcast for the great Emery Hunt. I'm Nando DeFino. Thank you. We'll see you again very soon. Bye-bye.